Hello and welcome to Essential Dissent, coming to you from the last days of the U.S. Empire. I'm Wilton Vaught, producer of the series. This episode consists of interviews conducted by peace activist Jack Gilroy at an anti-genocide protest and fast held at the Isaiah Wall in New York City, across from the United Nations building on August 12, 2024. Reading from an email disseminated by the organizers, World Beyond War and a growing coalition of peace groups welcomes you to join a fast and days of action in New York City from August 10th to the 15th, 2024, as an assembly of peace activists delivers to various missions to the United Nations an online email letter signed by thousands of people from around the world. Mindful of the suffering that Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank endure, we urge the member states of the United Nations to uphold the rule of law where the United Nations Security Council has failed. Member states of the General Assembly can and should enact the Uniting for Peace Resolution 377 to end Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. And now, the interviews at the Isaiah Wall.
Hi, I'm Jack Gilroy with Veterans for Peace.
Mary Olive Fox Christie.
Mary.
I know you, Jack.
Okay, we know each other, right. Can you say a few words here as to why you are here today, what this is all about?
Yeah, we are here again today, as we have been every week since October, standing outside the U.S. mission, protesting the U.S. policy to give arms to Israel to perpetuate this grotesque, horrific war against Palestinian families in Gaza. I'm here because our tax dollars are not being spent for good, they're being spent for evil. This is, people cite the Bible for each side of this contest, but biblical plagues have nothing to do with what's happening in Gaza. Little children whose arms are being stripped from them, little children who are losing their legs, their parents, their eyes, little children who have no water, who are breaking out in horrific polio and other epidemics. What we are doing is pure evil, pure and simple. And the United States, through our mission here, is executing a policy of execution. Our ambassador here has issued many, many vetoes of overriding the will of other nations to do something about this problem. And we are here as Americans saying, not in our name, not in our name. We are sick of this militarism. We will be out here as long as it takes until this brutality ends, and it will end. The problem is that war leads to war, violence leads to violence. So to the extent that any side of this believes that they're putting an end to violence, they're simply opening the door to more violence. And when the Israelis say, oh, Hamas will be defeated, what about these little kids? How are they going to view Israel? How are they going to view Israel? So they're not buying themselves any peace. They're buying horrific war. And of course, that war wouldn't be perpetuated but for the United States using our money. And we're standing here to say, no, no, no.
Why is the United States so much on the side of the Zionist?
I'm not sure. Part of it is, well, it's always about money. It's always about money. It's a well-kept secret that Israel has nuclear weapons, and guess who works with them on the nuclear weapons in that part of the world? They're surrounded by oil companies, who have their own concerns about the safety of that area for resource extraction. The United States has 800 military bases around the world, and yet we complain about Russia and China, who have, what, 3 and 4 respectively. So we are simply trying to rule the world by taking its resources first and foremost. And in doing so, we're willing to run roughshod over the lives of innocent people.
Some people have said, made the allegation that Israel is pretty much the tail wagging the American dog. Why is that?
Well, Israel serves a purpose for the United States. Otherwise, you can be sure the United States would not be interested in Israel. It's militarism. It's a base for the United States. The United States, oh, well, it's not us. We're just supplying the arms. But for those arms, this would not be happening. Israel does not have these arms. We're using our investments in science to kill, and we're sharing that, the product of that investment, with people who kill. So to the extent that President Biden or anyone else says, well, we're not really involved, they're doing it. Much like what's happening in Ukraine, it's the United States behind it. But I should say one more thing.
Yeah.
One of my friends from Veterans for Peace, Doug Hostetter, has a friend who is in Gaza right now. It's a young man who has two little children. Now they're two and four. At this point, they've earned a year of life. They've stayed alive another year. Most of their family has been killed, and Doug is getting emails from them on a daily basis. So we've been able to follow what's been happening every day, and it is just horrific and heartbreaking. They don't know where to go. They're given instructions to flee. They've fled 14 times already. They've lost their mom, they've lost their aunt, they've lost their grandparents. The kids are breaking out in these horrible rashes now, God knows what it is. The kids are losing weight dangerously. And so we're following them. So it feels very personal also. And so Veterans for Peace, thank God for you guys and women who are standing up for peace.
Rosemary Pace is the director of New York State Pax Christi, or give me the correct title.
That's good. That's coordinator.
Good. Coordinator. But Rosemary, why are you here today?
Well, today is the first weekday of a week-long series of actions for Gaza. For a fast, some people are fasting the entire time and some people are just participating in actions. One of the prime actions is to deliver letters to different missions to the UN. The missions that were chosen, I understand, were missions that have significant engagement, involvement with the issue of Gaza, of Israel, whether they are on the Security Council or some other arms trade, whatever it might be. And so I was here, I went to a few of the missions. Unfortunately, most missions did not have staff available. They didn't have set appointments, and without a set appointment, it's hard to get in. So in most cases, it was a matter of just dropping off the letter. But the letter is appealing to the countries that are receiving them to stop arming Israel, to join, I can't remember the exact title of it, but there is a process at the UN when the Security Council, as it has been doing, keeps blocking ceasefire, for example, the General Assembly can override that if, I guess, there's enough. I don't know.
Two-thirds, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the number is. But they're really appealing, the letters are appealing to these missions to step forward if they're not on the Security Council and take that right that they have and that responsibility, really, to do that for the sake of Gaza. And I personally have been just passionate about Palestine, I think, since the day I learned about it in elementary school. So I feel very strongly, I've been there. I feel very, very strongly that what's going on now is genocide. And it has to stop, and the place for it to stop, I think, is with the United Nations.
Well, Pax Christi is not just an organization in the United States, but it's international. Pax Christi, the Peace of Christ. Can you tell us what the position of Pax Christi is?
Yeah, Pax Christi actually does have an NGO team here at the UN. I'm not part of that. They have been speaking out repeatedly, calling for a ceasefire, calling for an end to the genocide, and I believe they are using the word genocide. Pax Christi has a pretty good relationship with Palestine. I said I was there. I was there actually in 2015 with Pax Christi specifically to celebrate Pax Christi International's 70th anniversary, I believe it was at the time. And it was very intentional that we were there. We stayed in Bethlehem, not in Israel. And there was a good relationship with, and there still is, with some Arab educational organizations there. So definitely wanting peace, not taking a confrontational tone against Israel, but standing with the rights of Palestinians, their right to exist, human rights, civil rights, an end to the genocide.
just as a citizen, not necessarily as a member of Pax Christi, if you didn't see the joint session of Congress with Prime Minister Netanyahu on television, you probably read about it. What is your general feeling about the applause and the support of Mr. Netanyahu?
I'm horrified, personally. I just, if I can say this and not get myself in trouble, I think Netanyahu was a huge liar. You know, I think, like other politicians we know, he lies. And everything is Hamas, everything is Palestine's fault. And personally, again, I can knock off any opportunity to be accepted inside Israel anytime soon. But I firmly believe that Israel wants to wipe Palestine off the face of the earth. I think they just want to get rid of every last Palestinian in the region. And they'll keep using Hamas as an excuse, but I think the reason we're seeing genocide, they're not just attacking Hamas. Why they're attacking schools and places of worship and healthcare facilities and starving the people, and the people have no access to, you know, medical care for injuries. I think it's all intentional. And I think the ultimate goal is to push every last Palestinian away.
You know, some people talk about Americans have a lot of compassion, and they do very often, especially for people in their own country, right? With obvious exceptions. But there doesn't seem to be that outreach of compassion, or there would be much greater pressure, wouldn't there, on the politicians, those fellows jumping up to applaud the mass murderer, Netanyahu?
Right, right. Yeah, it's something that totally befuddles me. Actually, I think only since October 7th, is it the first time that I've seen as much attention that is pro-Palestine. Before that, I saw none. Mm-hmm. Before that, I don't even know if I would have had the courage to say what I just said. Mm-hmm. But it's still obviously not enough. You know, the U.S. keeps saying, don't do that, and here's more weapons. You know, right. You're so hypocritical talking out of both sides of your mouth. If you really want to stop it, we could stop it probably in a day. The day we stop arming and financing Israel. So I don't understand. Other than for most Americans, the media have been so, so biased. Everything always starts, you know, like in terms of time when something happened. Everything starts, for example, October 7th. Nobody talks about what things were like October 6th.
Right.
You know, it's always the Palestinians who started the trouble and therefore the Palestinians who were wrong.
Very little about the 75 years prior to that.
Right, exactly. So when that's what Americans grow up believing, and we all like to believe that our country is moral and is noble in its intentions, if they don't try to find out on their own, they're going to buy that lie and they're going to stand with Israel against the Palestinians and believe that they're all terrorists.
Yeah, that issue of propaganda, Wilton helped a man out up in Middletown, and we came down by train who was fumbling trying to get a ticket, and Wilton went over and got the ticket for him. And the man said, what are you going, can I ask you what you're going to New York City for? Are you tourists? I said, no, we're going to go down to discuss the United Nations and Gaza. Oh, I'm glad you're doing that, he said, because Israel needs more help. We're not giving enough assistance to Israel. What do you think about that?
I wonder when I hear something like that, does that person really believe that? I don't know. Does he not realize that the U.S. for years and years and years and years has been giving $3 billion a year to Israel and now is giving way more than that and arming Israel to the hilt? I just don't know whether people sincerely don't know. I think that even in terms of the U.S. military budget, just the general U.S. military budget, we're kind of fed this notion that the U.S. is vulnerable and we need all these weapons and we need all the nuclear weapons and we need all the drones and we need this huge, huge military arsenal and personnel. And I don't think most Americans realize that our military budget is more than double the second highest military budget, which is China. Russia isn't even there. And that our military budget is, I've heard different amounts, but being conservative, the smallest is to say our military budget is equal to the next 9 countries combined.
Rosemarie, since you're a big shot with Pax Christi, Maybe you could help us with the Pax Christi National International, because I'm a member of Pax Christi, and I felt it was part of me that was working on this pledge, a conscientious objection pledge to not interview or work for any war industry. I went over this just yesterday with several college students. They think it's a good idea. Would you be willing to, once I could send you the pledge, would you be willing to pass that on to Pax Christi National and International?
Okay. I can pass it on. I can't guarantee anything, but okay. I can pass it on. Right. Yeah, that sounds like the same issue we've had with Pax Christi USA years back, when Pax Christi National conferences used to be at mostly Catholic colleges, and most Catholic colleges have ROTC.
Right.
And the concern of a lot of members was that we were going to colleges with ROTC, but it's hard to find a Catholic college that doesn't have ROTC. And so I think it's a similar attempt that may be hard to win.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Rose. Thanks, Rosemary. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you.
We've got Zul from New York City. So, Zul, what are you doing here today?
We're here today in front of the United Nations because we are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. And numerous folks who are joining us are visiting various missions to the United Nations who are in support of the case that South Africa brought to the International Criminal Court, and we're asking for members of the assembly to continue calling for a ceasefire now. You know, we're in a terrible situation, as we always are at the United Nations, with the Security Council. I mean, almost everyone, maybe everyone in the General Assembly can be in agreement, and we cannot pass a resolution. We cannot get it past the Security Council because the nation
of the United States veto, or
the United States veto, or the Russian veto, or the Chinese veto. But essentially, you know, these few empires, the American still being the dominant one, at least for today, are able to control everything that happens at the United Nations.
Now, my understanding is that an emergency session can be called if the Security Council vetoes a resolution that is in dire need of human action, and that the General Assembly, if they get, I think it's two-thirds of the total number, they can override the Security Council.
Yeah. Yeah, but in the world in which we live, which is essentially a one of global political capitalism, and the Chinese Communist Party, by the way, the best players at it now, this is the economy, and every country in the world, depends on that. And so they think first of their own security, by which I don't mean the people of their nations, but of the authorities of their nation, the military, the police, the media of their nations. And they do not wish to risk that, in my view.
An interesting thing happened on the way down here. We left from Middletown, New York, and there was a man stumbling trying to get a ticket, and he couldn't do it. And Wilton Vaught, who's the sound engineer here, went over very graciously, the great Wilton Vaught. And so the guy was very thankful, seemed like a nice man, probably 70s, you know. And he said, "Can I ask you why you're going to New York City?" And so I said, "Well, we're going down because of what is happening in Gaza, and we're going to be going to the United Nations." And he said, "Well, I thank you very much for that," because he said, "We simply are not helping Israel enough. Why is that? How does that come about?
Because, you know, the media is part of state control. I mean, we don't really live in an Orwellian state. We live in a Huxleyan state. And so we use soft power to control people. And essentially, you know, we're taught hate from a very young age, and we're taught to think most of the time. It really doesn't matter where on the political spectrum the media is. They are essentially, you know, Democrat or Republican. They're part of a duopoly that is both capitalist and militarist. And look, I'm a Jew, an American Jew, well, that's a very limited way in which I identify myself. But Israel at this point, and perhaps from the beginning, exists no more than the primary, you know, battleship of American empire in a part of the world that still gives us most of the fossil fuel resources that we demand, that our military runs on, and for which it is not held accountable in the least, the greatest polluter on the planet.
Many people have criticized Biden, for example, that he's just part of the American dog. The tail is Israel wagging the American dog. Could have Biden ended this?
Yes. I mean, it's foolish to think that Israel's the dog. It is a dog. And for me, you know, Zionism is antithetical to Judaism. You know, the first principle of Judaism, as I understand it, you know, is chesed, loving kindness. Treat others as we would wish to be treated, the golden rule, or, you know, the Ten Commandments. The first one is thou shalt not kill. And this is what we're insisting on doing. And the United States is the primary backer, not simply politically, but corporately. We supply the vast majority of the weapons on our taxpayers' dime.
The Veterans for Peace have a letter. This has been designed by Terry Lodge, the distinguished attorney from Ohio, with the assistance as well when he did the first one from Marjorie Cohn, who's the professor and well-known international attorney from Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. Now, this particular issue was taken to state departments, right? 17 different state departments, letting them know that they are responsible, that they are aiding and abetting by helping to supply weapons to Israel. Now, Attorney Lodge has turned that around, and this coming week, he will be showing his new letter, which is directed toward the war industry. In other words, that it will be like the Krupps in Nuremberg trial. They were, you know, private individuals supplying the Nazis, etc. So do you think this has any possibility of catching on?
I think we try everything. And look, you were one of the brave members of Veterans of Peace and other folks who went to the various state departments to deliver this letter and also have gone to the merchants of war, the merchants of death, as we call them, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon. You know, there's a not a very long list, but a short list of people who supply these weapons of destruction. And I think we do whatever we can. We recognize that for the most part, that the media and also the courts are in the thrall of the corporate powers that control American empire and other empire, and that, you know, essentially, you know, the two major industries on the planet today are fossil fuels, the polluters, and the death dealers, the arms merchants.
Yesterday, I met with a Palestinian student. He's actually 30 years old, a graduate PhD student from Binghamton University, another PhD student with just a few months left doing social. He'll get his PhD in social work. And a young man from the New York City area, Amari Pavadi, his name is, great kid from a Jewish family. One of his grandparents is upset with him because he did research on merchants of death in the Binghamton area and taught me a lesson. I didn't know that some small corporations were actually part of the big picture. But we worked together to design a pledge that these students think that they're going to get around the country. And I'd like to hear from what you think about it. The pledge is that young people will pledge conscientious objection to not interview or work for war industries.
Well, I certainly would take that pledge and most certainly support it. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we're finding in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, the Israeli military, we're finding young people who are refusing to go to Gaza, who are recognizing genocide for what it is, and they have become conscientious objectors. So I think it's a very important pledge. And I have to say, you know, as an American Jew who, you know, questioned Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East before my bar mitzvah. So at the age of 12, I asked about that, and the Hebrew school teacher said, blah, 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 blah. I said, Rabbi, I don't understand. He said, blah, blah, again. I said, I really don't understand. Sent me to the principal, and the principal and I talked, and essentially he said, you know, do you want to be bar mitzvahed? I said, what does that have to do with anything? He said, go home, talk to your mother. So this has been a very difficult issue for Jews of several generations. Now, listen to my parents' generation. You'll remember, Jack. Jews trying to escape the Holocaust were not allowed into this country. I mean, dear Roosevelt, who so many of our, you know, predecessors love, did not allow that that one boat. I forget the name of it. You might remember the ship, and it wandered around just as so many of, you know, Haitians and other peoples left it to wander
back
at sea today, and sent back to their death. And so in many ways, you know, Israel itself was a final solution because both the Americans and the British chose not to protect the Jewish people. And I think, you know, and we're starting to see this, many Jewish people are beginning to reclaim homelands which were in Germany and in Poland and in Austria and all over Europe, Western and Eastern Europe. So I hope to see more of that. I hope that someday we'll see a Palestine where all people can live together. And perhaps the United Nations will make that its capital.
Zuhal, great stuff.
Thank you, Jack, very much. A pleasure.
You're listening to Essential Dissent. This episode consists of interviews conducted by peace activist Jack Gilroy at an anti-genocide protest and fast held at the Isaiah Wall in New York City, across from the United Nations building on August 12th, 2024.
Hi, Jack.
So, Mr. Donovan.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about the long trek that you had this past spring with Veterans for Peace. You were pretty much a large part of that, weren't you?
It was really an amazing trek from Maine to Washington, D.C. So that's what the trek was, and it was walking for peace. It was a peace walk. I joined the first 8 days and then had to double back for some work and would join the walk at a couple of other locations. And yeah, long story.
How was the reception in the various places you were at?
Right. That's the key word, various. There were certain places we were very, very welcomed and other places that calling us names, you know, go back to where you came, get out of here. But for the most part, I'd say we got thumbs up and people were appreciative. Not every day did we have a Palestinian flag, but the days that we carried the Palestinian flag or two, we definitely got more harassed. And we also got people pull over to thank us. So, It was a brave undertaking, and hats off to everyone that joined. And I just, what it did for me is, once again, humanity is really beautiful. You think you're alone in these fights, and people come out of the woodwork to put you up, give you hospitality, make food for you, pull together places where you can share and talk and present. It's really amazing. I have to really give a big shout out to the Friends, you know, F-O-R, the Quakers. They were so great from Maine all the way to D.C. They just consistently were helping us along the way. And many other groups, the Catholic Workers and War Resisters League, but a lot of different organizations pulled together.
How about media? Did you get any media coverage?
I'd say no.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we did get some local media. Nothing big.
And you made your own media too, though, because
Ellen worked tirelessly. I would send her photos. She would post. Did a lot of posting. I didn't write up anything yet. I'd like to, especially for when it came through New York City.
Yeah.
New York City, I was in charge of. We didn't do a lot here in the city, but we walked across the GW Bridge into New Jersey. It's in New Jersey that we got some interesting receptions.
Interesting in what way?
Interesting. We got a lot of pushback in some towns in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there were two towns that are raising the Palestinian flag in their city hall. So, you know, they really welcomed us. But, you know, we did get the Zionist flag, the Israeli flag waved in our face a lot and shouted down a couple of times by a few.
Yeah. I asked someone else the question. Why is it that some people are saying that Israel is the tail that wags the American dog? Why is it that Israel has such great support here in the United States?
Wow, that's a great question. There are a couple of books I recommend by Khalili, I believe, from Colombia. It's a 100-year war on Palestine. It's such a great, great history because the answer to that is really goes into depth, but, you know, the British started us off here. People lived in peace over there, different Jews and Palestinian, you know, Arabs and Christians, and all the faiths lived for much of the time in peace. So then this wanting a homeland and wanting to steal land and pretend no one lived there, we're reaping the results of really that horror over the many years. It started long before 1948. A lot of people like to say 1948, the first Nakba. Really horrible things were happening before that, you know.
Even in the 30s and 40s.
Yes, in the 20s.
The United States is the word. The Pentagon is releasing information just last night, I guess, that they're sending submarines now with missiles on board toward a region of Israel in the Eastern Mediterranean. Do you see any real danger here at this particular point, especially when you tie in the nuclear threat up in the threat in Ukraine and now in Eastern Mediterranean?
Well, I am talking to Veterans for Peace right now. And if anyone knows this danger, it is you. And you know very well that this is an extreme danger, especially all our rhetoric around Iran, which since 1979, we've been painting purely as this evil cause of all the unrest and the terror in the Mideast. But it's not true. Basically, the question you asked me before, Israel is our outpost in the Middle East. Israel is the U.S. outpost in the Middle East. It seems like an army base to me, but it's got a lot more complicated factors weighed into it, including tremendous amount of Americans who've gone over there to live and call it their home and say it's their land and it's always been their land. It's really important. I've never been anti-Semitic and I never will be, ever. And so what the conflation right now is standing up against war and calling for peace, being called anti-Semitic. And that's, you know, we're getting all these stats that anti-Semitism is raising in America, and it's baloney. What they're counting now, calling for ceasefire, calling peace, is being anti-Semitic. So if we can keep pushing back on that lie, on that falsehood, yes, it's extremely dangerous. Israel and the U.S., I've been talking about taking out nuclear capability of Iran for a long time. Mm-hmm. They say they're in violation of something. But it is our country, the United States, that has been in violation of the NPT right from the start. We're not doing our job. We're violating things.
So do you think that the United States government could actually do something to stop all this?
Yes, of course we could. We could stop sending the bombs. We could stop sending our carriers and our submarines. And we can negotiate just like with Ukraine, Jack. You know, we could have negotiated and we're not. Sometimes I guess you pull a carrier up to show a little strength. But this is provocative. And of course, Netanyahu came, got all these standing ovations, and he spoke with both our leaders, well, three of them, if they're leaders, and the next day or two assassinated the lead Hamas person trying to sue for peace negotiations. So he must have gotten the okay to do that. That's all we can say. Same with Downing, Raisi. Iran is a very intelligent, diplomatic place. I've been there. I have great respect for the Iranians. Doesn't mean they're perfect. Doesn't mean that they don't get involved in things that are not quite right. But murdering someone in Tehran had to have our go-ahead. And the same with the downing of the helicopter with their president. They're not saying anything. They're not going to say we downed it. They're not going to say it was sabotaged. The Iranians, they know if they did that, that would really widen the war. So to me, that's probably what happened. Do I have any evidence? No, but it sounds like from the rhetoric that's been going on, that's what happened. So they're being themselves, very diplomatic, the Iranians. I really want to stand up and say, stop, America, stop it. Stop listening to Israel about Iran. Go there. You know, I've spoken to our diplomats. I've spoken to our ambassadors here at the UN for years about Iran. When I see them in the hallway, or I've seen them at meetings in the UN, and I said, hey, especially Robert Wood, I said, two rows behind you is the Iranian delegation. They would love to speak with you. Would you just say a word? Would you think of just going back and talking to them, and he looked at me, I'll never forget, and he just looked at me like I was crazy in his eyes. But he said, why would I ever do that? That's what he said to me. Why would I ever do that? And walked away. So, you know, that's the U.S.
Yeah.
Iran is an ancient culture. A lot of Americans do not know that the second largest Jewish community, practicing Jewish community, synagogues and all, is where? It's in Iran. It's in Iran, and Americans don't know that. They put out all these. They also love to talk. I was talking to a very intelligent person my age the other day, and he goes, Anthony, how could you say anything good about those? They were sending children for 8 years in that war with Saddam. They were sending their children to the front lines just as fodder. I'm like, sorry, that is a myth. That is a lie. We told, you know, there were a couple of 14-year-olds that lied about their age, just like here in our wars. We've had people that lie because they were enthusiastic, wanted to join the cause. There were a lot of youth in Iran that wanted to join the cause, begging, and some of them lied about their age. Yeah, and it was repeated to me the other day, the same old stuff. And our senators and congressmen, listen, what happened to Masha, the woman who was killed, she was killed. That was wrong. Thank God in America, we don't kill anybody. Right?
Anyway,
but that was wrong, and we're all sad about that. But then our congressman started talking about hundreds of women are being executed in Iran. On the floor of Congress, they were saying this stuff. Thousands are being brought in. And then, so these are all lies. It didn't happen. I called the friends I have in Iran and said, wow, so people in the streets, you know, no, there is a student action at the Tehran University, but it seems to be under control. But we just pushed the flames way too much and lied. There were two activists that were executed a couple of weeks after that. They were rising up in protests, but they weren't executed because they were protesting the wearing of this headscarf. They were executed because they killed two Iranian policemen. That's why they killed. But did the Western media report that? No. Two activists were executed in Tehran for protesting. That's what we got. And you know who the main media sources, Iranian, are? The main Iranian station in the United States is out of California, and who funds it? Saudi Arabia. It's a Saudi Arabia-funded Iranian station. So we know those who got booted out in 79, and I feel for them. Anyone who loses home or job or a family member to that, taking back their land, really, taking back their oil fields, is what happened in 79. They took back control of their country, and all we think of is the flag burning, right? That's all the image we still have is the flag burning. Yeah, it's remarkable to me to see when the Hamas released some of these hostages, how healthy they looked, because everyone else is starving there. No one can get food there. It must be quite a task to try to keep these people alive. I don't know how Hamas is doing it or whoever's keeping them. Anyway, I'm for the release of all hostages. We all know the suffering that goes on with war. War breaks all the rules. We have to stop it. There's no reason. It's only continuing because the United States, our country, is letting this go on. We like to blame everything on Netanyahu. We've known Netanyahu as being just a horrible person who's been wanting this, cleaning the slate for a long time, and now he's doing it. And we're just standing by saying, well, they have a right to defend themselves. But on October 8th, it was probably very clear to you. It was certainly very clear to me, those of us who watch alternative media. But on October 8th, it was very clear this is stepping beyond self-preservation. This is going beyond self-defense. When you see all these civilian structures, 20, 25 stories just coming down, yeah. I'm still haunted by that first week of Israel's bombardment. And I saw a picture, and it's still seared in my brain, of a young, I think she was about 5 years old, walking through the rubble with her fluffy cat, holding her fluffy cat in her arms by herself, just like looking where to go with her cat in her arms. you know, I still, she's probably gone, so is that cat, but it's an image I'll never forget. There are a lot of animals in those buildings as well, but...
This has been really good. Could you clearly state your name for the audience here?
That's too hard.
Go ahead.
Anthony Donovan, yeah.
In New York City.
New York Chapter 34, Veterans for Pete, associate member. Yeah, long time.
Thank you, Anthony.
My name is Katrina Canyon, and I'm the executive director of Peace Economy Project. Mm-hmm. And my reason is kind of personal. I was working in child rights, but volunteering for Peace Economy Project. And when I saw the first bombing in October and I saw all those children laying in gurneys, I couldn't consider myself being for child rights when I saw children dying right in front of me. So Peace Economy Project had been looking for a new executive director for a while. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And I decided that day that I was going to do everything I can to promote peace, not only in Gaza, but all over the world.
Well, that's a good point because, you know, there seems to be in America a growing compassion for children and for people, you know, around the U.S. But what is it when it's in some other country, whether it's Russia or Palestine or whatever, we don't seem to have that same kind of compassion. How do we change that?
Well, and my organization, and I personally believe that we can't change it until we start investing in the peace, investing in the future, investing in our children. It's always the United States' first response is to act strategically with weapons and with the military instead of strategically with programs that promote peace and sustainability. Mm-hmm. And we need to start thinking peace first before we think defensive weaponry.
I have a suggestion. It's a pledge, really, a conscientious objection pledge that we just put together, and we're going to be getting some people to hopefully sign it. But the pledge is for young people, especially some of these university students who were out on strike and who had the campus enactments this past spring. And the pledge is that they will not interview for war companies or they will not work for war companies. What are your thoughts about that?
I think that this is the appropriate time to do it. I have several college students that are in fellowships with Peace Economy Project right now, and I am more than confident that they would be happy to sign a pledge like that. You know, I have physics students, I have statistics students, and they are constantly on their campuses being hounded by organizations like Boeing, mm-hmm. where they don't want that. They want Boeing out of their universities. They want to promote peace. And I think that Peace Economy Project has seen an increase of volunteerism from college students who want to express objections to what's going on around the globe.
Alice, I'm Jack Gilroy with Veterans for Peace.
I know you, Jack. Yeah, I know you're from the... Sure, I knew
okay.
you looked familiar.
Alice.
Oh, my God. You're from our No Drones, Band
No
Drones.
Okay, Band. Yeah. Okay, Alice. Okay. And this is Wilton Vaught, and Wilton does all of our technology, our sound technology.
Thank you both.
And, you know, we heard from so many people, you've got to talk to Alice.
Oh.
So you've been with a number of different organizations over the years.
Too many, probably.
Code Pink is one of them.
Yeah, I'm a little stressed out with everything, but I'm so happy to be with so many wonderful peacemakers.
Well,
so
we'll wait until
I
this
kind of gravitate
engine goes
toward
by
them.
Here.
Yep.
Alice,
I'm addicted to peacemakers, so when I see them, I gravitate toward them, and they keep me going through another day.
I know you've been at so many different other peace activities, but why are you here at the Isaiah Wall?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm a groupie following Kathy Kelly, who I think is phenomenal, and I followed her work since, I guess, she was sitting on the border in Iraq trying to stop the bombs with a few other people. She's such a courageous, nonstop hero. Well, I think everybody who takes action makes a difference. Sometimes it's hard to measure what it is. I mean, Kathy's made a difference in my life, that's for sure. So we certainly all make differences in one another's lives, and we just want to see it spread far enough so that we see it manifest in the rest of the world. You know, for me, I'm Jewish, and I've been working at this for a long time with a group called Women in Black, and that was actually started by Israeli and Palestinian women in 1988. And I tend to be a very non-sectarian Jewish person.
Yeah.
So I felt maybe I'm not Jewish enough to take a stand on this. So I was very happy to see people who were more religious than me get together. And there were Israelis and Palestinians at the time. And they said, we have to stop the occupation. It was in 1988 during the first Intifada, I think, with them. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing a Women in Black in New York since then. We did one at Zabar's. We did one at, I did one in my neighborhood in Washington Heights. Mm-hmm. And I'm going back to that same neighborhood now doing a vigil, trying to get a response from some of the more traditional Jewish people.
Yeah. Do you find in New York, which probably has the highest Jewish population, right? And
we do.
Do you find a lot of comrades?
We have a lot of comrades, and we have a lot of people who are against us, you know, who are really fighting. And I was just saying, you know, to Trudy, I'm very frustrated because I feel like we haven't really made an inroad into the Zionist structure.
Right.
And that's really where we have to go. I don't know how we're going to do that. We talked to each other. I'm in Jewish Voice for Peace. We went to the Rotunda and got arrested together. And it was like the most wonderful night of my life. I was thrilled. You know, I was with everybody. We were all wearing our T-shirts that said, Stop Arming Israel, the red T-shirt, Not in Our Name. And the
Some
Rotunda
say
with
that
rabbis.
More dangerous than the Jewish Zionists are the Christian Zionists.
I believe so, yeah. Well, Zionism, you know, I don't really know the whole history, but it was started by Christian Zionist and Jewish Zionist, and just it's a right wing movement for settling, for imperialist settling is really the way I see it, but it's not the way a lot of Jewish people see it. You know, we're taught to see Zionism as a source of strength as a Jewish person, but many people have moved away from Zionism. That's not an excuse. You know, there.
Well, the Christian Zionists, of course, believe in Armageddon, end time.
No,
you know,
I'm not a fan of Armageddon.
Yeah, and that's really pretty spooky.
Yeah, sure.
When they're even saying, well, since Israel has nuclear weapons, you know, they have the opportunity to end it all.
Right. It's not my idea of a good time at all. Definitely not. Definitely not, so, not what I want to say.
Could you mention something about the aging grannies? That I hear that you're...
Oh, the raging grannies.
We are aging.
We're definitely aging and raging grannies. Aging and raging grannies. I forgot when we started. We started in the late 80s, too, in Canada. Mm-hmm. And that was to stop a nuclear fleet that was coming into the waters. And they said, well, they won't listen to us, so let's dress in outrageous clothes and sing outrageous songs based on old melodies. So that's how the Raging Grannies got started. Okay. So we have a New York gaggle. Oh, here's Kathy. Hey.
Great.
Yay. Welcome back. So we have a New York gaggle, and we're still...
A New York gaggle.
Gaggle. Yeah, we call ourselves goggles, and we have unconventions where people go and get together and decide how to keep the gaggles going. And we just...
I heard you sing at the High Line here a few years ago. You were probably in the group. And a lot of fun. You guys
had a good time. We tried to make it fun.
You did. Alice, so good sharing that. I'm
sure
you've done over the years,
you could
talk for hours.
Jewish Zionist lobby, and I don't know how to do it, so I'm very frustrated.
Well, good luck on that.
We have to figure out how to do it. So if you have any good ideas, let me know.
Okay, we're really fortunate, the Veterans for Peace, to have Kathy Kelly. Kathy, why are we here today? Why are you here today, I should say?
Well, you know, Jack and Wilton, I think that we share in common, having grown up in a generation that wondered, how could the Nazis ever have come to power? How could it be? How could any society allow this? And it's so telling to me now that everyone in my generation is saying, you know what? I don't ask that question with the same bewilderment anymore. Tragically, sadly, with horror, we've seen every day, massacres, starvation of children, destruction of villages, of mosques, of the ways for people to escape, the bombing of humanitarian workers, the killing of journalists, assassinations. Even snipers have been targeting children, shooting them in the head. And so we have to ask ourselves, well, what can we do? And it's not true to say, well, there's no way that anyone can enforce international law. And I actually don't even like to use the word enforce. But international law exists. And if it's to have any strength, if we want to have it continue for the future, this is sure a crucial time. And the member states to the United Nations do have capacity to fulfill obligations that are now very clear following the July 19th ruling of the ICJ, the World Court. So we don't really want to come here to preach at people. I believe the workers here, the staffers, the ambassadors, they all know what's going on. But we need to hear from them, okay, what are the obstacles? What are the frustrations? Is there anything people can do? And I would imagine people might say, well, your country, the United States, is a major obstacle. And so that puts another responsibility on our shoulders to tell the United States how ashamed, how horrified we are by the reckless behavior that has covered for Netanyahu, that has helped him undermine every possibility of a ceasefire, and has given us the most ridiculous notions of a six-week pause, and then Netanyahu could resume wiping out Hamas entirely, and that, he says, is his stated goal while genocide continues.
Well, apparently we can't really plan on Joe Biden, who says he's a Zionist, and besides, he's a lame duck president now. The two groups running the two war parties, Republicans and Democrats, none of them seem to be speaking out about ending genocide. They're talking about ceasefire, perhaps. What is it that, you know, the United Nations could do? Since the U.S. will veto almost everything, what can the General Assembly do?
Well, the General Assembly does have options. For one thing, under the July 19th World Court ruling, that's the same as the ICJ, each one of the member states that signed the Genocide Convention or the Geneva Convention, according to Article 1, has an obligation to stop trade with Israel. Now think about that. Some of these countries do billions of dollars of exports to Israel, other millions, and they are now duty-bound under international law to stop. They're also duty-bound not to support Israel's military any longer. Stop sending weapons. Now, I don't expect that the countries are going to immediately say, well, you know, we don't want to be scofflaws, because the United States will punish.
Right.
And they'll punish countries mercilessly. So the other thing we think of is that it's almost like union organizing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The member states of the United Nations General Assembly could, it's been done before, they could all agree to what's called a Uniting for Peace resolution. And it sounds a bit odd, but actually, because there was an emergency crisis in Gaza declared 20 years ago, a state of emergency, it's never been undeclared. And so you don't even need to have a resolution go before the Security Council for the United Nations General Assembly.
They just have to act. They have to
just take the, get themselves organized so that two-thirds would pass, agree to vote together, and then I believe they might need seven members of the Security Council.
Well, three quarters.
This was done before when the United States wanted the enactment of a Uniting for Peace resolution because Egypt and France had invaded, it was all over the Suez Canal, they had invaded Egypt, and the U.S. didn't want trade at the Suez Canal to be interfered with. So the U.S. overturned France's and the U.K.'s capacity to issue a veto. There is certainly a, when that's not the only one, but that's one that's so interesting because it involved Gaza.
Right, right. Kathy, you and I have talked before on Zoom about conscientious objection to working in industries. Yesterday, I had a meeting with three young university men, and they like it very much, the pledge. Could you say something about that, about this would be a pledge that young people would make, not necessarily just university people, young people will make, saying they will not interview for a job with the war company, nor will they ever work for a war company. Do you think that's something we can get around the world?
Follow the young people. I'm so excited to hear the young people talk about how they're really thinking hard, you know, what will be the best way to resume the student energy that so inspired the world with regard to their refusal to let their universities just blindly invest in and continue supporting war criminals. And isn't it interesting that after World War I, the ravages of that war, students across the United States took pledges and they said, they made oaths, they went on strike. They said, we will not become involved in a foreign war. We won't fight it. And so no one really often asks for our bodies these days. What they want is our money and our assent. And I can hear the students thinking, well, maybe we could have a student-led strike. Maybe we could do moratoriums and teach our own classes. Maybe it's going to be a good time to call for a general strike. But the students are thinking hard, and they need to, because they are facing terrorism. Mm-hmm. They're facing the terrors of what we're doing to our own environment and their future with ecological collapse, the terror of nuclear annihilation. And we shouldn't forget that Israel has nuclear weapons in the Negev Desert. You know, you can talk about what Hamas had underground, and I hate it. I think the means you use determines the end you get. Tunnels for food, yes, but tunnels for, what, you know, planning to kill, no. But let's think about where the greatest dangerous tunnel is, and that's the Shimon Peres Research Center in Israel. So, you know, they face potential nuclear annihilation and then future epidemics. And where are the resources going? Where are the professors being encouraged to apply their minds and their skills, their determination? Lockheed, Boeing,
right.
Raytheon,
BAE, all
BAE,
the rest.
BAE, L3 Harris. Mm-hmm. It's a shame and a scandal, and it may not be survivable.
Well, let's hope that the student activities that are developing in September and October and this fall, that they'll be pointing in that direction that you're talking
Follow
about.
Follow the young people.
Follow the young people. And they will be delivering, some of them will be delivering the 6 broken laws letter of the Veterans for Peace.
Terry
they might
Lodge.
Want to be at the same time encouraging fellow students to take the pledge, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think pledges can be a good idea. You know, we are a country that saw abolition of slavery, although it's not entirely abolished, I know, not with the mass incarceration system or the ways that many refugees are treated, but also the suffragist movement, the union movement, civil rights movement. So there is some pledging that's gone on in the past. And I think when people bind together, when they say, we're in this together, and also, you know, where do we really do our best learning? Is it necessarily inside of a lecture hall? Or might we find out that we learn a lot when we're on the streets, when we're encamped, and when we're passionately believing and then acting in what we believe?
Kathy Kelly, one of the board of directors for the Veterans for Peace. And you also have a role with World Beyond War. What is that?
I do. I'm the board president of World Beyond War.
World Beyond War.
And Felton Davis took 50 pictures. And of course, there's no Kathy Kelly with a World Beyond War banner. David Swanson is going to say, how does she manage to never be there? But I was so fortunate. I left a bag on a bench at a bus stop here in New York City, just absent-minded. And a fellow who'd gone to the Catholic Worker Soup Kitchen lunch called me and said, I have your bag. I'm in the park. I sell stuff in the park. So I got everything back except some cash.
But right.
God bless him.
You're the most important thing.
Everybody I know went over there and gave him cash
today. We want
today.
You back with us every time we can. Thanks,
Kathy.
Well,
lovely to be with you. Thank you. Thank you for coming to New York.
You've been listening to Essential Dissent. This episode consisted of interviews conducted by peace activist Jack Gilroy at an anti-genocide protest and fast held at the Isaiah Wall in New York City, across from the United Nations building on August 12, 2024. Thanks for listening, and remember, never believe anything until you hear the official denial.